Welcome to this episode of How to Sell Technology to the Government. Today we're going to talk about combatant commands, those interesting organizations that do all of the actual war fighting. As always, if you like this content, if it's interesting and informative to you, do me a favor, like it, share it, repost it, all the things. The more people who hear about it, the better. So, into combatant commands. So there's kind of two different kinds of combatant commands, right? There are the geographic combatant commands and more of the functional combatant commands. So for the geographic combatant commands, the COCOMs, if you will, the GCCs. So for every square inch of Earth, there is a combatant command that is responsible for the warfighting function in that geographic area. Okay, North America, South America, Asia, Europe. Every square inch has a command, generally a four-star command, that is in charge of planning, organizing, and executing combat operations and other things in that geography. So what does that mean? We go back, the services, right? They organize, train, and equip, right? They create soldiers, sailors, airmen, and marines, and guardians. They give them, you know, their capabilities, their weapons and whatnot. They train them how to use them. And then they provide them to the combatant commands to go actually do things. So if something's going to take place in Asia, Indo-PACOM is in charge of organizing and running all of those things. In the things going on with Ukraine and Russia, that's all UCOM. Okay. The important thing to know, really, two most important things to know. One, combatant commands don't have money, right? Combatant commands do not have program executive offices. They don't procure things, right? They also don't organize, train, and equip people. So when you talk about training, the people who get sent to combatant commands, who get sent overseas under the control and responsibility of COCOMs, they come with all the training and all the equipment that they need to have in order to fight in that theater. Okay. So when you think about what you're selling to the government, you're not really selling things unless you're doing some smaller stuff like services and support. You're not really providing that to the COCOMs. Okay, that's number one. Number two is there's a pecking order. Okay, so circa 2024, the pecking order, whether you like it or not, top of the block is Indo-PACOM, right? China is the number one threat. It's the number one concern. That's where all of the focus, a lot of the resources are going. Number two behind them, generally UCOM, right? The things that are going on with Russia and Ukraine and all the things in that European theater. And then it kind of filters down from there. CENTCOM is still a little bit important because, so Central Command's generally the Middle East and North Africa. Still pretty important because, you know, terrorism's still a thing. And then AFRICOM, right? So all of Africa, not including like very northern tip, kind of next in line in terms of importance in geography. SOUTHCOM is kind of below them. And then NORTHCOM is really always, almost always the least important, right? Because why? Well, we don't really fight wars in North America. So those are really all the geographic combatant commands. And then on the other side of the house, you have the functional combatant commands, things like STRATCOM, which controls all of the nation's nuclear weapons, CYBERCOM, which is supposed to do all of our cyber fighting, right? Doing all the pew, pew, pew with the cyber bullets. Okay. SPACECOM, which is supposed to fight in space, whatever that means. And then Special Operations Command, which has all the Green Berets and Rangers and Navy SEALs and whatnot. And then there's also TRANSCOM, Transportation Command, which, frankly, like literally just in charge of like global deployment and moving of bodies and things. Okay. This is the stack now. If you go back a couple of years, if you went back to like 2004, number one, AFRICOM wasn't actually a combatant command before. It was part of CENTCOM before they got branched off, but CENTCOM had primacy. Since the War on Terror started, all of those things, like CENTCOM was the most important combatant command. Behind them, SOCOM was pretty darn important, right? The first folks into Afghanistan, the first folks into Iraq with Special Operations Command, those two tails were wagging the entire DoD dog. So where all the focus was for 20 plus years. And then behind that, kind of PACOM and UCOM and SOUTHCOM, the stack kind of filtered the same sort of way. But those things changed, right? The strategic priorities and focus areas of the DoD and the national defense strategy is really where this comes in. It all changed. And with that changed the focus. And with that changed the resourcing and the investment that goes with that threat focus. Okay, so when President Obama announced the pivot to the Pacific, right? That's when these things started to shift, when the focus started to shift away from CENTCOM and SOCOM and towards INDOPACOM and towards the, quote, great power competition. Now, what does this mean in practice? Because the COCOMs do play a role in resourcing, okay? Well, what do the COCOMs bring to the table? The COCOMs bring to the table is threats and problems. They are in the places. They're doing the things, right? They are the ones who are concerned with actually winning wars. So when you think about things like the Chinese maritime militia in the South China Sea, or Chinese expansion into their near abroad, or the Russian jammer enterprise, or the Russian S-400 IAD systems, right? Those threats are localized to those areas. Those threats are the capabilities that our capabilities need to counter, right? We need systems to counter the one-way drones that Russians are flying and that terrorists are flying, right? The insurgents are flying. And so that's where this comes in is, you know, the services don't just come up with threats. Those threats come from the combatant commands, right? So when a new threat comes up in a combatant command, they can articulate that to the services because the services, right, the component commands are responsible for providing service, providing capable and equipped, right, organized, trained, and equipped forces to those combatant commands. So what does it mean with the combatant commands providing threats to the components? Okay, so combatant commands have responsibility over theaters. They have to essentially be able to fight wars in those theaters. And so in practice, the combatant commands will come across a new threat for the area for which they are responsible, right? So, hey, you know, in the CENTCOM AOR, right, the area of responsibility, there's these new drone boats that insurgents are using as part of their tactics to disrupt the Straits of Hormuz, right? Something like that. The COCOM will communicate that to the components. Hey, we have this new threat that's emerging. It is threatening this particular part of our operations. We need forces that are capable of countering that threat, right? So if we're talking about drone boats and Straits of Hormuz, there might need to be a capability on a Navy ship that is able to counter those threats. Now, maybe there's a capability on the ship right now that adequately counters them, right? Maybe you can just use a HIMARS or something to counter them. But if there isn't, if there's, say, you know, one-way drones coming through from Syria, and we don't currently have a capability that's able to counter those threats, then that's when the requirements development process hits. That's when the folks in the component commands, right, the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, Space Force staffs, particularly the G3, A3, the operations staffs, they validate that requirement, that threat. They say, hey, there's this new thing that came up in this area of operations that we need to address and respond to. And we don't adequately have a capability to respond to that threat. They have to do a capabilities-based assessment, CBA. They have to say, hey, here's all the things that we currently have in our inventory. Here's this threat. Our inventory doesn't adequately address that threat. And that's what kicks off the research and development phase, right? So the folks in the PEOs can put money on research and development, things like your SBIRs, your OTAs, your broad agency announcements. Where do you think those topics come from? They come from threats that are taking place in the combatant commands. So when the folks in the E-ring, the folks in the PEOs, they do that investment, they buy that new technology, or they develop that new technology, right? They provide it to, right? So The COCOMs come up with a threat. They provide that to the components. The components validate those threats and those requirements. They pass those requirements to the folks in the PEOs. The PEOs put money into research and development, ideally into acquisition. Those acquisitions then turn into capabilities that get pushed out to the major commands, right? To the actual forces. So that new thing that counters drone boats in the Straits of Hormuz gets bolted onto the deck plate of a Navy boat. And then the Navy's responsible for, one, getting that boat where it needs to be, so allocating that boat to the COCOM, but also ensuring that the sailors that are on that boat are capable of using that new piece of equipment to counter that threat that the COCOM promulgated. Okay, so this is kind of the way this virtuous circle rolls. Right? And this is how new capabilities are supposed to get to the field, because those sailors need to be trained in order to actually use that new capability. Okay? And then those forces, those trained and equipped forces, can then get provided, can be allocated to the COCOM to actually counter that threat. Now, sometimes that takes a while. Oftentimes that takes a while, right? It takes a very long time to quote unquote turn an aircraft carrier. It is what it is, right? You're talking about spending tens to hundreds of millions of dollars training thousands of people and providing these new capabilities that have never existed before, right? Nobody else in the world has to do that except for the United States military. Literally anybody. Everybody else just copies us, okay? So yeah, it takes a little while. And somewhat apocryphally, sometimes by the time you get that new capability to the field and all your forces are trained and ready to use it, sometimes those threats have changed, and now there's a new, most important thing out there that you now have to counter. It is what it is. Don't get mad at the process. Just work with it. And know that that is the process, right? It's much easier to work within a system that you understand rather than shaking your fist at a system that you don't understand. So this is not a deep dive into how the PPBNE or the JSIDs or the GIFMIG processes work. This is just a general overview of how these processes flow. And now that you know that, you can be better equipped to work within the processes and make the processes work for you. And that's where you actually start making money.